The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. The Explorers podcast is sponsored by RM Capital, a provider of specialist small to mid-cap corporate advisory and boutique wealth management services. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perreault columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. We're off to French-speaking Gabon in central West Africa today, where Apollo Minerals is working on proving up the province-scale potential of its Crusoe zinc-lead project in the west of the country, a country probably best known in mining circles here for its long history as a manganese producer. Apollo trades under the code AON, or Alpha Oscar November, and was last quoted at 10.5 cents for a market cap of about 41 million. Its shares have performed well in the last 12 months too. That reflects two things: the province-scale potential of the Crusoe project and the fact that investors are turned on to the strong price performance of both zinc and lead. Zinc, at $1.36 US a pound, is up by 33% on its average for calendar 2020, while lead is 22% higher at US $1.06 a pound. Apollo entered the project in September 2019 and is having a busy year with its maiden drilling program. Some impressive drill results have been reported too from a number of prospects, so there's a strong news flow from this one. We have Apollo Executive Director Neil Inwood with us today to bring us up to speed with the Apollo story. G'day, Neil. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Barry. Thanks for having me.
And it'll be great if you could give listeners a bit of a professional background on yourself.
Certainly, Barry. Look, I'm a professional geologist. I've been in the industry for about 25 years. I have a background in gold with Barrick Gold for about 9 years, and then I was consulting for approximately 10 years after that. Most notably, I was the principal resource consultant with Copy Mining before I left, and also heavily involved in the uranium space back in the previous uranium boom. Since that time, I've been involved more in venture capital and also more recently running Birkett Minerals, which was a cobalt explorer in Europe. I've got a master's in geology. I'm a technical geologist. I quite enjoy the rocks, but also enjoy the business aspect as well. For myself, I was talking with the broader Apollo group last year, and this project was mentioned, and it actually caught my eye, especially on the scale potential of the project. For me, this was actually quite a neat project to get involved with.
Now, Gabon, probably not well known in this market as a mining investment destination, although I did mention its long production history of manganese. But if you could give us a feel for the country in terms of its stability and its attractiveness as a place to be exploring.
Absolutely. Look, Gabon, it's in West Africa, French West Africa. It's a fresh French-speaking country. Modern Mining Act, it was updated a few years ago. We found it's actually very, very good to be operating in. Well-functioning government, well-functioning bureaucracy, really good infrastructure, great people to deal with, and quite a good technical base in country as well. So there's been some major operating mines in the country. They've got a good mining history. The mines department, you know, they're quite experienced in dealing with mining projects, you know, licensing through to permitting, which we've quite enjoyed that process dealing with the mines department. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a rich country as well. I think it's the fifth richest by GDP in Africa. They've got quite a large oil and gas industry, which is kind of a bit of the backbone of the country. There's been a manganese project mining for 40 years with Eramet, quite a large European company. You know, even in COVID days, we actually found operating very effective in Gabon. There's good local infrastructure support, like heavy machinery, skilled, you know, labour, mm-hmm. and even getting expats into the country. There's a process to get in the country, even in these COVID COVID days. And we actually sourced a lot of our technical geologists actually from France or from French-speaking Africa, and that's actually working quite well for us as well.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a few French speakers on the payroll?
Oh, absolutely. Our exploration manager, Cédric Genest, he's based in France. I shall be learning French a bit myself, I think required going forward. And on our board, we've got John Wellborn. So John's actually worked a fair bit in West Africa and is a fluent French speaker as well. So A couple of the directors speak French, and definitely all of our technical staff speak French as well.
If you could give us a bit of a feel for the history of the project and what it is about the project that gives you that sense that you might be onto a province-scale opportunity.
Absolutely, Barry. Look, this is what I think is one of the most exciting aspects about the project. In the 70s and 80s, the project was explored by the BRGM, the French Geological Survey, and they identified the initial occurrences of zinc lead mineralization in the region. What makes it exciting is they were focused on lead, which is galena. It's a silvery sulfide mineral. And when they were drilling the project, they drilled hundreds of holes, but they'd only sample them if they could see galena in the core. And we've inherited this database. Before us, Trek Resources were exploring the project, and they drilled about three dozen holes, quite successful, I might add. And they noticed that when they were drilling next to the French holes, they were getting, two or three, times more mineralization that was seen previously because they were sampling the complete hole. Mm. And through our work this year, what we're realizing more and more is that often we're getting quite broad regions of mineralization, and it's not a lead-zinc deposit. It's actually a zinc rich deposit, which is sphalerite. And the sphalerite doesn't look as obvious as the galena. So we think the previous explorers had missed sampling a lot of the mineralization because they're focused on the galena. Mm. And definitely with our recent drill results, we're seeing more and more that we're seeing more mineralization than was indicated by any of the historical BRGM drilling. And our drilling is supporting the really good results that Trek was getting in say, 2017, 2018.
BRGM, of course, famous for exploration. It's conducted throughout Africa.
Mm.
And generally speaking, is it correct that with this project, their work has more or less pointed to about 150 mineral occurrences over about 70 k's of strike?
Well, absolutely. We have a broad trend of over 80 kilometres, and we call this the strike trend. But within that, there's 18 identified prospects with identified mineralisation, and only four of these have ever been drilled. We've been recently announcing the results from the Dikaki prospect, where we've drilled some 45 drill holes, and we've got the first 25 back from the lab. And the drilling at Dikaki has been quite successful, we think. And we've just started drilling at the second prospect, which is Nyambabimbu. And at Nyambabimbu, there's been no drilling previously, yet there's been rock chip assays of up to 25% zinc and lead. So this is the first drilling now in a undrilled prospect where we are seeing initial indications of sulfide mineralization. As a company, we've tested two of these prospects and we think we're seeing some very good indications of mineralization. There's another 16 to go, which we haven't touched on yet. So when we say this is a prospect scale deposit, we mean that over this 80 kilometers of broad strike, there's 18 really good opportunities here for mineralisation.
Why did you start at Dikaki?
Well, to be honest, partly access. So we started drilling when it was still slightly in the wet season, so we had better road access there. Also, Dikaki had some of the more drilling than the other projects previously. Mm. And as it turns out, all the drilling we're seeing at Dikaki that we've done is actually significantly better than especially the French drilling. So we actually think Dikaki has very good potential to be a standalone project. And then as we've entered the dry season, we've moved to Nyambabimbu, and that's where we're drilling at the moment. And this is, again, that area which has had no previous drilling. So partly due to access, partly we thought at that stage it was the better-looking prospect. But, this is really a developing story. We need to get to those other prospects as well, which have just as good as potential as Dukaki.
Now, I was wondering if you can put some geological context around, I believe it's what, sediment hosted in preserved channels, very wide channels on basement rocks?
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's very similar to a Mississippi Valley type mineralization. So we're getting young sediments which are onlapping into an older crystalline basement. As it is, we actually think the system's still alive, that it's still generating mineralization. We look at some of the core we're getting. So this is not too dissimilar, for say, to other zinc-lead projects which are getting popular on the market at the moment. For example, Rumbles Project,
yep.
Earhardy. We're getting a zinc-lead mineralization which is coming through groundwater into young sediments, and it's depositing in areas where the water can flow through, so into more porous sediments.
Mm.
And we're seeing about four or five different styles of mineralization, all associated with where these groundwaters are flowing through.
So when you get this extensive flat-lying mineralization, obviously close to surface as well here.
Yeah. So what's quite exciting for us is, and you've hit it on the head there, Barry, we're seeing shallow, flat-lying mineralization. So at Dukaki, the average depth to mineralization from our assays is about 15 to 18 metres. We're seeing broad intercepts, for example, up to, 11 metres at 3. I think we had 20 metres at 3 in the previous results as well. So quite shallow, flat-lying, broad sections. So the last announcement put out on the 1st of September, we're seeing the sections are still open for up to 400 metres on section. And we think this system has potential to link up for over 2-3 kilometres. Yeah, so it's quite exciting for us.
Given the nature of the mineralisation, which you've just described, are you at all possible at this stage to put at least an exploration target?
A lot of people have been asking me that question. I should point out too that we're also seeing the mineralisation sulfide from surface. So often these systems have, in Australia, for example, have an oxide portion. From what we're seeing at the moment, it's all sulfide. An exploration target, I am hesitant to put one on Dukaki yet because I'd like to just kind of expand out our drilling. But I think as a geologist, I'm seeing, a channel with 8 kilometres of trend, which I don't think has been drill tested very well at all, with widths up to 400 metres wide. So, we'll be looking at that in the future. But then I've got 17 other prospects as well with nary a drill hole in it. So it's kind of hard to put an exploration target on those bad boys.
So you're drilling as we speak at the second prospect?
Yes. So we're about 2 dozen holes into the drilling at Niambibimbu. The other week we put out an announcement just highlighting that we're seeing base metal sulfide minerals in the drilling, mm-hmm. and especially that first section at Niambibimbu. It seems to be quite shallow as well and looks very similar in characteristics to what we're seeing at Dukaki. So mm-hmm. very much a developing story at Niambibimbu.
And how far is that from Dukaki?
Oh, that's about 16 kilometres south. So this is, again, one of those 18 prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And the way these prospects work is they're little channels which go into the crystalline basement. And when I say we've got 80 kilometres of strike, that's kind of like from north to south. Each of these channels has about, 6 to 8 kilometres of prospective valley contacts as well. So there's quite a considerable amount of prospective geology that we're testing.
I think we all know from our school geography days that Gabon is not landlocked, but I'm just wondering, infrastructure-wise, say you were to come up with a big mining project on your hands, what would what infrastructure is there to support a development in the future?
Oh, great question. So coming into our project, we've got the sealed N1 national road, which terminates about 30 to 40 kilometres from the project. And then we have well-established country dirt roads, a bit like you'd see in outback of WA to some of the towns.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the town, it's about 20 k's to our project from the nearest town. And there's at Dukaki, for example, there's a logging track, and that's like it's almost like a dual lane highway on dirt road. So quite a well-established road. The beauty at Dukaki too is we're actually about 15, 20 kilometres away from the nearest town, so we're not impinging on any population. We've got really good support from the local community and the local and state government. So one potential solution there is road haulage along pre-established tracks. There's also potential for barge haulage further down to the west, and there's some existing barge solutions which go to the Port Gentile, which is a major port in Gabon as well. So look, in a nutshell, there's maybe a 250-kilometre haulage to Libreville in one direction, or there's a potential barge solution to the west as well.
Compared with WA, not bad then.
Oh no, it's really good, really good.
Importantly, with these type of deposits, you mentioned the oxide, no oxides, but I was just wondering, metwork, have you done any metwork?
Yeah, there has been. There's some high-level metwork done in 2018, and this was to test the high-level flotation of the mineralisation, and that work came in very well. They're seeing over 90% flotation recoveries from both the lead concentrate and the zinc concentrate. So part of the plans for this year's work, we'll get some more test work to try and fine-tune the metallurgical process. And we're also going to look at options for beneficiation as well, because we look at some of these mineralisation styles, we think they'd have good potential for beneficiation in that process too.
Right. Now, I mentioned price strength around zinc. What's your read on the zinc market?
Strong. I think, zinc's used for predominantly in steel to prevent corrosion. It's also used nutrients. There's talk in the future too of some zinc air batteries. Lead's got a strong usage in car batteries, which even with the advent and the increase of electric vehicles, most electric cars actually have a backup battery, which is a lead acid battery as well. So I think the base drivers are quite strong. I think the economy is looking to pick up, increased steel production, increased car production, et cetera, will keep on leading to an increased requirement for zinc and lead.
Just mentioned lead there. There's no EVs in my street yet. and I've just been through a Melbourne winter where I've had to replace the batteries in one of the cars. So there you go. All right. So in terms of news flow, if we can just get a feel for what we should be looking out for in the coming months.
Absolutely. So we've got several batches of results which have been sent, which have been sent from Libreville to Perth. So they're already in the process now. Some are at the lab, some are in transit. And, in the coming weeks, we expect to get more and more results from Dukaki, and then we'll start getting the results from the Mbimbu coming through. And also we'd be looking at potentially supply some updates on our regional exploration and also some of our geophysical exploration as well. So we think there's will be quite a few positive news flow events leading up from now to the end of the year.
Sounds like you're spoilt for choice in terms of the drilling campaign, the scale of it. So you're funded to keep up the pace for a while?
Yeah, no, we are. We're well funded for this year's exploration. Thanks, Barry. We had just a bit over $3 million at the end of June, and what we have done, we've locked in a quite a reasonable drilling rate per meter rate with a local drilling supplier. So we've got a good control on the costs in country. We've got a nice tight little team on site, and so this enables us to do drilling at the key projects. And also we've actually doing some greenfields exploration as well. And we're just sending over now some passive seismic gear to start doing some seismic lines as well, which will help us lead into next year's exploration.
Okay. Now, given the potential scale of the opportunity there, I was just wondering whether, and the performance of zinc, lead, I was just wondering what the level of institutional support on the register was like at this stage.
Look, we're getting some really good feedback. There's strong support out of Europe, UK and Germany for the project, and talking to the broking houses in Perth as well, there's actually quite a fair bit of interest. So obviously part of my job is to be selling this story, talking to people, and that's especially what we're doing right now as we are getting the news flow events coming through. But look, I'd say quite positive, Barry.
Well, there we go, folks. So an emerging zinc lead story, one with some real scale to it, and happening as we speak. So good luck with it all, Neil, and thanks for your time today.
Great, thanks, Barry. Thank you for talking to me.
This episode of the Explorers Podcast was sponsored by RM Corporate Finance, an active participant in emerging companies around the globe.